we have to rebuild. I didn't even get to try to run a laundry yet. None of them had revenue. I didn't have revenue. You've got to get out of your store as an employee. It still remains my biggest headache. Customer service forward to the max.
Hey everyone, Dave Menz, Laundromat Millionaire, coming to you again from Cincinnati, Ohio for another episode of the Laundromat Millionaire Show. And I've got with me my better half, my beautiful wife, Carla. She's with me today, and guess what? I have another friend. Another friend. Yeah, what can I say? I make friends easily. I got another friend with me today, and you are probably going to know who this gentleman is. But if you don't, you're going to want to listen to this episode because he's got a lot to offer the industry. He's got a huge heart. He's all about giving back to others. And we wanted to have him on the show for quite a long time now, and we finally were able to get that nailed down right before the conference, actually. And by the way, spoiler alert, you're going to find this guy at the conference. So if you like this episode and you want to get to know him better, you may want to come to the conference. It's not too late. Anyways, Carla, you want to introduce our guest today?
Yes. So our guest today is Ross Dodds with Lux Laundries. He is the owner of their 8 retail locations, as well as Wash Club LA, their pickup and delivery service, all centered around Los Angeles. So Ross, welcome to our show.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. So happy that we made this work, and just getting so jazzed about the conference next week.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
I can't wait for some sun.
No kidding. Yeah, whatever y'all got in California, bring that to Florida in case they don't have any, okay?
Sure will.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, as I was telling you offline before we got started, you know, for those of you that don't know from the intro, Ross has 8 retail locations all branded. I call it a chain, which is different than a franchise, but I consider whenever they're branded together, I'm kind of being a chain. Like we have Queen City Laundry, and him and his husband and his business out there have really been doing some amazing things. I've seen pictures and videos, and wow, are they building some fantastic stores to serve that area out there. I'm sure he'll have a few funny stories for us along the way too, because Ross is all about being transparent and sharing his funny stories. But anyway, Ross, let's jump right into it because we have so much to cover and so little time. Tell us about you as a kid. What was your upbringing like? Because if I remember right, I don't remember where your childhood was, but I don't think it was in LA. Is that right? What was being raised as Ross Dodds like, and how did that make you who you are today?
So I actually grew up in Vermont. My parents both worked for IBM, my dad for 34 years and my mom for 32 years. And about halfway through high school, my dad had an opportunity to go to Louisville, Kentucky, to kind of switch careers over to being a technical director for a golf association. That was always his hobby growing up, and I helped him when I was a kid put together golf clubs. It seemed like a great time in the middle of high school for me to kind of get away from Vermont. Was starting to be a little small for what my options were going to be after high school. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, let's go to Kentucky. So I finished high school there, and then kind of started moving around the country a little bit after that, trying to figure out where I wanted to be. And finally came back to LA in 2009 for my third time and have been here since.
And I know you got started in the laundromat business in, I think it's 2014. Is that right? When you got your first store?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I want to hit on this real quick. I know we're jumping ahead a little bit. I hope it's okay. I want to hit on this because I've talked to you a little bit, and I think I've even saw like your podcast with Jordan on Laundromat Resource. I learned some tidbits there too. I want to fast forward a little bit too. I think it's like roughly 2014 when you got into the industry, because I think if we pick this apart for a few minutes, there's a lot of value, because you and I both know that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, want to be entrepreneurs, business owners someday. And, you know, Carla and I started pretty scrappy. I mean, we didn't have a lot of money. If I remember from your story, you were like all about the like putting everything on your credit cards, which we did some of that. And I know you really kind of, I don't know, I'm going to use the word piecemealed, at least the financing aspect of putting your first store together and getting into the business. and kind of that like highly leveraged, I'm sure highly stressed at times. And I was wondering if you could kind of just take us down that journey a little bit real quickly so that we can help people that want to get into the industry. But, you know, if you don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars, you can't just like usually go out and get it the next day. You kind of got to start where you are. And I think there's a lot of people that would get a lot of benefit from your experience in that way. And we may throw in a few of our nuggets too, but can you tell us about getting that first store?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely, just kind of risked it. I preface that depending on your family situation, you might not want to quite go as risky. my now husband, Russell, and I were only dating at the time, and he had a corporate job. And so when I started looking at this laundry thing, and he was like, okay, what's that look like? It was like, well, how about I just buy the first store in case it goes wrong? We could just keep it all in my name. And so it took us almost a year to buy the first one. We found a really, really run down laundry. I had some lines of credit, some large credit cards, and I just, took advances off of all of that and closed escrow with cash and went over at the time. Alliance had basically what they call the one-page application for up to $100,000. It was like applying for a credit card in 30 seconds. They'd be like, yeah, you can do 100. Anything more than that, you had to start doing taxes and stuff like that. So I did just the 100 and they approved it. So I was like, that's where we're going to start. That started it.
What did you pay for that store? If you mind.
So I think we originally went into escrow at 45 55 or something, and something happened a week or two in, and I believe our final number was 46.
Okay. So I bet a lot of people that are watching this right now are kind of thinking to themselves, wow, you bought a laundromat for $46,000. And I suspect I know what that looked like. But can you real quickly tell us about that store? It had to be pretty bad, right?
Bad doesn't begin to describe it. The like 20-inch box TVs in the corner that probably were supersized at one time. At the dust that was a foot deep everywhere you looked, don't forget the bucket of keys. I remember the owners laying out on an entire table the keys, trying to mark them for me, and half the washers were out of order, about half of the dryers were out of order, some missed the doors, like it just it was pretty.
What attracted you to it other than the purchase price? Like, were you just like, wow, this isn't a great location?
Well, so it's funny because it took us 11 months to find this one and buy it, but it was actually one of the first ones I saw when I started looking for laundries, and I hated it. I had something different in my mind of what I wanted the laundry to look and feel like, and I just couldn't picture it yet. But over that 11 months, I can't tell you how much of my own laundry I did. I would practically go to a laundry every day and do laundry so that I could sit there for an hour in something and not be looked at like, why are you in my laundry taking notes and taking pictures? Like, I could just be in a corner and I'm another person on the phone. And I learned a lot about what I liked and didn't like that changed drastically in that 11 months from when I first started looking with, rather, you need to be on a main road, where in the shopping plaza you can be, how much parking you need. Obviously, Los Angeles is a different animal than so many other places. I visited the Wilfords, and you can drive a car through their aisleways. We can't do that here in LA. But So yeah, we had gone into, we were really close to another one, and we just couldn't quite make the numbers work, but they unfortunately had a loan, so they couldn't go any lower. And we had, Russell and I had just left a meeting with their attorney and everybody trying to make this work. And on our way home, this laundry happened to be around the corner from where we lived, and we went in and it was like, oh my God, I love it. We're buying it. We're buying it. And like less than 2 weeks later, we did. So
getting it in that shape, but not really having a lot of money, I'm sure it needed to be a complete gut job, right? So how did you even manage that?
It should have been a complete gut job. And I think my plan was the washers, which isn't even all of the washers at $100,000. And then the first few days I was there, I was like, this isn't going to work. We need some dryers too. So I was actually in the process of going over to Dexter to do their one page application and kind of like cross each other without anybody knowing. and then overnight, the laundry burned down. So it gave us a different path immediately.
Oh, wow. So did you have enough insurance to rebuild, or where did that put you with the fire?
Hey guys, this is your girl Lira, and you're listening to Self-Reflection Podcast. Thank you guys for joining me on another episode of Self-Reflection Podcast. I hope this podcast episode finds you in the best possible state that you can be in for yourself today. And if you're not doing your best, I hope, you know, you find some time to care for your mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, and your psychological health. You know, I hope you find some time to do some self-reflection. Just gather yourself and, you know, find the best possible way you can deal with what you're dealing with in this moment, right?
In the end, we were heavily underinsured, we had enough insurance to pay for the equipment, and then all the remodel and all of that stuff. I mean, and so now I'm a big proponent on talking about insurance, because normally they'll tell you, well, what's it going to cost to replace it today? And you're thinking your equipment replace it. But no, we had to have an architect. We had to have plans drawn up. We had to replace the plumbing, the electrical, concrete, all stuff that is not equipment. And so we ended up being about $250,000 underinsured. But that gets back into my creative financing. it was so soon I decided we have to rebuild. I didn't even get to try to run a laundry yet.
Are you renovating your store or building a new one? Tired of persistent and expensive plumbing issues like I was? Get an HM Company drain trough to give those drain lines a fighting chance against the constant wear and tear of laundromat life. Sizing is fully customizable to meet your needs, and lead times are a maximum of 2 weeks. I've used them in my stores in Cincinnati for years, and I'm installing them in my new store, which is opening soon. Visit their website today at draintroughs.com and contact your distributor to order your drain trough today. So did you end up getting all new equipment out of it? I mean, I know you still had to come up with the financing for these other things, but it sounds like you went from a lot of old equipment to a lot of new, or all new equipment. Was it a total loss, I guess, is my question.
It was a total loss. We didn't suffer a complete loss of fire damage, but the insurance company doesn't want to deal with holding equipment or anything like that. So they just liquidated off. I guess I got lucky with my insurance agent. She was fabulous, or adjuster. She was fabulous. She found me money in my policy I didn't know I had. So she really worked for me. I know a lot of people talk about getting adjusters. She welcomed me to get an adjuster, but we knew pretty quickly that I wouldn't have enough insurance. So she was like, you're just going to be paying an adjuster out of what you could be getting because we're going to max out your policy. The upside to an adjuster is dealing with it. I mean, we were 2 years all in before we got reopened. I mean, that the hoops and the headaches, I learned so much about building a laundry before even running a laundry.
That's interesting. So if people were to look at, say, oh, if I replace all the equipment in here, it's going to be $400,000. Have you kind of figured out like sort of a percentage? You're like, well, if your equipment's going to be 400, then you're probably going to want to increase that by 20% or 50%. Or have you ever thought through it in that way?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're probably a little more expensive here in Los Angeles and permitting is slower. This at the time was only an 1800 square foot store. And you look at that, we did get the landlord to pay for some of the electrical. But a landlord is responsible for a white box and a laundromat is not a white box. A white box is your lights and your bathroom and a floor. It's none of your aisles, any of that. I mean, plumbing alone was over $40,000 and that's an 1800 square foot store. So yeah, it's definitely, I start at the 200 above equipment and then go up from there, depending on the size of store. Just because in the front end, you're paying an extra 100 or 200 a month. We had loss of income for 12 months. We went 24. We had to start paying rent and equipment loans over 6 months before we even were able to open. So it's a big difference.
Yeah. So a lot of people might hear a story like that and think, oh, that's, you know, that stinks. You had to go through that, but it's actually great in the backside because you ended up getting all this equipment for free that you had old equipment, but look at what they had to go through. And I suspect, I mean, did you come out ahead, behind, or kind of a wash at the end of the day?
I mean, well, so when the fire happened, we received the first check that we received from insurance was what the equipment currently was worth at the time of the fire. So with that check, I cleared up our debt and put a little money in the checking account and then went and bought another laundromat.
Wait a second. Did I pick up on that right? You bought another laundromat before you rebuilt that one. So you went from 1 to 0 or 0 to 1 to 0 to 2 and then back to 1. Is that what happened?
Yeah. And so we thought let's might as well go into this full bore now. Buy another one. Hopefully buy one that's running. That's kind of like our first one was, it needs to be redone, but it's running. And in the middle of escrow, the owner came in the middle of the night and took all the money and put a sign up saying closed and turned his phone off and stopped speaking to anybody. So the management company and owners had to actually file in court for abandonment. And that took a month, 2 months. And then just when the judge ruled about the abandonment, he filed personal bankruptcy and listed the laundry as an asset. So it froze it again.
Oh my goodness.
And so finally the creditors realized there was nothing at the laundromat for them. And so the space was released if we pulled the equipment until they fully settled it. So, but we went from buying a laundromat that was ready to open to a laundromat that took us 5 or 6 months to close on. And now it's been closed. So we were like, well, we might as well leave it closed and do our remodel. So we were basically doing two remodels to the tune of $500,000 on two locations at the same time when we weren't planning on kind of outlaying any of this.
Neither of which had any revenue, right?
Right. None of them had revenue. I didn't have revenue. We're out of our loss of income at this point on the first one. I became a very big fan of companies like Plastic, where you can write checks by paying with your credit card. And so I was paying rents through Plastic onto credit cards. It was getting a little hairy towards the end.
Oh my goodness. Your first two stores were absolute nightmares. How did you even end up staying in this business?
I think Enrique is a big, he's been in the industry for a very, very long time. I met him here through Coin Laundry Association, which I had started to go to before we owned. And one of the things he kind of said was like, because when we finally did get the stores open, I was working at one store one shift and then I would jump over to the other store. And he was like, I know you're really struggling right now, but you've got to get out of your store as an employee and work your store as the owner. And I was like, how do I hire two more people when I'm paying payroll on credit cards? But I did it. I figured it out. And it was under 60 days after I got out of being an employee that the laundromats broke even, both of them same time. That really changed my thinking, changed the business, and changed our trajectory from that point on.
Can you dive into that a little deeper? Because I know we may not get through all of your stories because you have so many, but I think the fire conversation, the way you entered the industry, and the fact that you transitioned fairly quickly from being what I call self-employed to being a business owner. And don't get me wrong, for all of you out there, you know I tout my story and my business model today, but what I'm really trying to do is promote the idea that that's what you should be shooting for. And so I think a lot of people misunderstand my message. And what I'm saying is it's fine to be where you are today, but always have a plan for being better tomorrow than you were yesterday. And always be trying to look and see how can I get to what I call the other side of the rainbow, right? And it sounds like you figured that out pretty early on. And there, by the way, there's nothing wrong with being self-employed for many, many years. I worked in my businesses and a full-time job for almost 4 years. Before I, left my full-time job and I was still self-employed. Now I was just working in my stores, trying to grow them and mature them. So everybody's timeline is different. I think the message that I try to get out to the industry is, it doesn't have to be this way forever. Because there are people that try to promote this as like, this is just a job, you're going to work until the day you die type of thing. And I just don't believe that message. Myself, our organization, and many other people across the country have proven to people that that doesn't have to be the case, but you have to have a plan. So it doesn't sound like you really had a plan. You figured it out on the fly. But walk us through that story. Walk us through how you were able to evolve, especially so early on. That's just crazy. How did you do it?
I think that's an excellent point. You need to have some sort of plan. When we get up to like the last 2 years, we didn't have the plan of like, oh, I think we're going to own 8 laundries. At that point, it's like, I'm barely holding on to 2. I thought for a second I was going to have to walk away and file bankruptcy because we're waiting for the electric company. But then get open. And I think if we hadn't opened 2 at the exact same time, I mean, they opened January 1st, 2017. 6 a.m., both laundries open. I had never ran a laundry. I had only hired employees leading up to opening, but we hadn't even been open. We're a hybrid store, so employees are learning a new card system that I'm learning. So I didn't have a chance to really put together processes and procedures So I was learning it with the employees, with mm-hmm. the customers. And if I had one location and then a second one, I could have at least had those processes. And then I could have probably at least worked for my company a little bit longer. But because of two locations and the fires in the, not literal fire anymore, but the fires that we were constantly trying to deal with and learning of the processes, I had to be available to run between each store. And I couldn't do that if I was working. Plus now we have two stores that were so run down and so out of order. And now they're brand new and beautiful. So customers really wanted to thank us for changing their laundromat in their neighborhood. And one of our main things from the very beginning was we wanted to figure out how to be in the communities that we were in and what could we help the community do. Obviously, I have laundry machines now. Everybody needs clean clothes. So that was the obvious first thing, is how do we give back free laundry to those that need it? And what does that look like? So as soon as I could get myself so that then I could just be there as the extra person, as the owner, and represent the company instead of running all of the machines, it allowed me to really talk with our customers a lot more, help the employees a lot more, which then just made the business more successful faster, because everybody appreciated it and could see it. And they were telling people a lot faster. So we kind of took off. We got very lucky in a lot of ways with those first two stores and how fast they turned around. We don't see that on our stores that we're doing these days. I mean, we were break even in less than 6 months. And my husband and I were talking about the other day, our new stores were averaging between 12 and 18 months to really kind of cover that threshold. So we got lucky with those first two.
Do you think part of that was the personal touch of you being in there and talking to the people, or do you think you just lucked into really good locations with the first two? Like, what do you think was the magic there?
I definitely think it's a mix of it all. I can't duplicate myself. So I try to be in our new locations in the beginning more than I end up being once they're up and running completely. But I was in the first two 16 hours plus a day. So you just always saw me. Now, not everybody sees me because I'm in for 30 minutes or whatever. So you have certain customers that see you, but it's not like in the past where I saw the same people all the time. So that plays a big part of it. But we also have better marketing and more social media that we do now that we didn't even know how to do at that point. I mean, we were lucky to be registered on Google.
So I picked up on something there I want to call out once again. You hired attendants for your stores, but that didn't mean you stepped away. You said you did that because you needed to be able to go back and forth, which I'm picking up on the idea that still meant you were in your stores. You were there with your attendants. They weren't replacing you. They were just replacing you temporarily, but you were constantly back and forth. So you were still very proactive. And I don't think it's a coincidence that you took rundown, dumpy laundromats and you made them pretty nice for the most part, maybe not 100% brand new, but made them really nice, it sounds like. Then you went from unattended to attended. And then you went from, I'm guessing, the old store owners weren't in the stores every day to being in the store 16 hours a day as the owner, in addition to the attendant. What I'm pointing out here is the stair-stepping of the increase of your value prop. When your value proposition increases so drastically like that in such a short period of time, that's not luck. like, it may have been luck because you didn't really know what you were doing, but you were intentionally doing those things, and you see, you receive the rewards of those things. And I know now that's part of your ramp up. That's part of your business model. Can you walk us through the next few stores and what you learned along that journey? Because I know you're, up to eight now, and I want to have time to get into your pickup and delivery too.
Yeah. So, I mean, our number one goal from the very beginning with being in the communities was to provide the nicest, cleanest, safest, friendliest. We had the intention to have all of our locations fully attended, to offer drop-off fluff and fold. And we were price leader from the moment we opened. I scream it from every rooftop to increase your prices. I don't care what you increase them to, just increase them. and we have consistently increased our prices typically twice a year. We get the occasional Yelp review, most expensive laundry in the area. And I don't mind that one at all. It's like when I removed top loaders, I was probably the first laundry to not have top loaders. I was the first laundry in LA to go full cycle dry. The mentality that I can't do it because my customers love it is just hogwash. I just don't buy into any of that. Customers love what they're used to, but they can also be retrained. It's not saying I don't care what they think. It's just saying that I also know what they need better than they do sometimes. So we really wanted that. I mean, the credit cards, now we are full card stores. We're not even hybrid anymore. I think part of that is the more locations we have, it just became a logistics of dealing with quarters that I didn't want. I was losing my time with it that I couldn't justify not paying the credit card fees because my time, I can't buy more locations if I'm busy collecting quarters. I know it sounds like a terrible problem to have, but so we're full card now. And actually we've changed our model a little bit. We don't do fully attended stores in all of our locations. Our third location was almost a loss at first. We totally gutted it. We probably spent too much money. And the bank allowed us to. They cross-collateralized our first two stores and let us 100% finance the entire thing down to doorknobs. and we ran our model in there, put the employees in, started fluff and fold. And it was just like every month I was negative by my entire payroll plus a little bit. So it was like, this is not even close to working. So we pulled the employees and went to kind of a part-time, no fluff and fold. And over the next year, that store kind of went up and up. And it's a special circumstance store. It's directly in a neighborhood. There's zero parking, but it's one of our most profitable stores now. Wow. So that kind of changed my mindset a little bit. Now I look at each project a little differently. I'm trying to plan in the future of rather we switch to just one model or we kind of keep this hybrid model of some stores are going to be fully attended and some aren't. That's what we've been working on the last couple of years is really trying to get down what our branding is, rebranding the first stores and retraining the new people so that we're back to kind of how we started, which was customer service forward to the max.
Well, and we all know, you know, you talk about going from partially unattended to partially attended to fully attended back to partially attended. That doesn't necessarily mean your customer service your value prop has to go down, right? Now it's usually correlated with how much you're willing to work, Because if somebody calls and they have a problem and you say, I'll be there on Thursday, that's not very good customer service. But if you're willing to walk out in the middle of lunch to go help that customer, then your value prop can be significantly higher, even though you're still a partially attended or unattended store. So I always tell people all the time, it's not about fully attended, partially attended. It's not about pick up and delivery or not. It's what works best in your market based on your demographics, but it's also what works best with your lifestyle and what you want out of your businesses. And I know for a fact that you're willing to do pretty much anything. I think you've proven that already in the story to be successful, and you're not afraid of hard work. So those two things go a long ways. A lot of people are attracted to this industry because they think it's a passive business, and we know that it's not. It can be passive way, way, way down the road for the owner, but it's still not a passive business. That just means you built up a team that can take over those operations for you. I think a lot of people misunderstand and sometimes even misconstrue those things. How quickly did you go from 3 to 8? And where in that process did you decide pickup and delivery was a good idea? And what was that journey like for you?
So I'll just add one more thing to the previous. I mean, we constantly talk in the industry, when do you replace your equipment? Mm. And for me, I replace equipment to have online access and to put in, we use FastCard in our stores, because that allows me the remote controls, remotely. To deal with a lot of this customer service stuff so that I don't have to run to the laundry. Not everything has a return on investment that is visible immediately on paper, especially doing card systems. That's hard to put a dollar figure, at least to me, in a way that I can explain to people. But it gives me the other controls that allow me to be out of town, allow me to take a vacation for more than 3 days, like when I first opened and had the changers. So that's my return on investment with stuff like that. So pickup and delivery, we actually started at the same time as we opened the stores, which was probably my other challenge. So that opened about April of 2017. We just kind of put that on somewhat autopilot in the beginning. We were paying the AdWords. It was running out of our first location. We had a driver that would come in and then they would work in the laundry if we didn't have any orders. So it was slow going. We were pretty much kind of doubling month to month, which is awesome. But when you're starting at like 500, it's not even paying the van. it was really, really a hard and slow process. I probably shouldn't have started it at the same time as the laundries. I'm very vocal about all of my challenges with pickup and delivery. We have a successful pickup and delivery today, but it still remains my biggest headache. There's no doubt about it. There's no sugarcoating that, which is why I share so vocally about it, because it can become a huge business with huge numbers that distract everybody from what it actually takes to run a logistic company, which is what pickup and delivery is. And you talk about the logistics and before cracking it, that it is a very cash intensive business. Like the laundromats, I buy the equipment, they're financed 8 years. I have some repair in there, but pickup and delivery, I'm having to constantly buy more stuff. So my costs are never at a fixed point, really, to this point because of all my van crashes. But so that's been a really challenging business for me. Surprisingly, COVID actually was kind of the turning point for not only our expansion, but also our pickup and delivery getting to a better place.
How did COVID help that?
So, I mean, I think we were all in the same situation of what are we doing? What's going on? What's this look like? until we finally got the stamp of approval that we're definitely going to be an essential business. The laundromats crashed for a second, and then they pretty much came right back up as soon as we were marked essential. But pickup and delivery drove off a cliff. Before COVID, we were 75% commercial and 25% retail. Well, commercial disappeared overnight. But over the next year, we actually saw our residential almost threefold from where we were pre-COVID. And then we started getting into a lot of the medical stuff that was still considered essential. So we picked up a whole new line of commercial stuff that we weren't doing before. Mm-hmm. So it really switched that whole business. And for our self-serve locations, COVID shined a light on the laundromats that were clean and taken care of and bright from the very beginning. It gave us a new mirror on us that, like, you're wiping down surfaces. My laundromat in my apartment building hasn't been touched besides the 10 other neighbors. And I don't know if they have COVID, so I don't like them. So it actually brought people out of their apartments into the laundromat because they felt like they were cleaner looking machines. Our laundromat is open. The doors are open. It's not in their basement. So we actually gained a lot of self-serve customers. And then the self-serve customers we didn't gain, we gained the people that wanted to drop off and have it done so they didn't have to be around anybody or the pickup and delivery. So we really gained a lot of customers through it, both in self-serve and pickup and delivery. And then the flip side to that is since it shined a light on cleanliness and everything, old stores that were making it because they were just in the right area of town. So people get into habits, and habits are hard to break. So they'll go to that store that they've been going to for 10 years, even if half the machines don't work, because they don't bother looking. And now they started looking. And so they started to leave those stores, and that gave us the opportunity to pick up a lot of stores. So I've been very, very lucky in the sense that people do seem to think of me when they want to get out of the business or they talk to their service technician and they know me. And so I get called, I have this laundry, are you interested in it? And so in the last 2 years, that's really kind of propelled our acquisitions.
People know that you're looking to grow. And if they're looking to exit the industry, I believe your business model, I don't know if it's in all eight cases, are all eight of your stores, were they run down laundromats that you made really nice and what I call a modernized laundromat in all eight cases?
Yes. Yeah, except for one. Yeah, otherwise they're either closed or on the verge of closing. And we come in and with delays on equipment, our model right now is kind of like, I call it lipstick on the pig first. Immediately, like day one of closing, you're seeing the ceiling being ripped out, new LED panels being put in. Or we're painting the ceiling lines or whatever. If it's a drop down ceiling and putting in fresh new tile, we paint the walls. I rip out tile or VCP because we do concrete, but we'll just rip out the tile and leave it until later on. And we change out the signs to really get people knowing that there's going to be bigger stuff happening. So that's kind of an extra cost because we end up having to paint it again later and all of that stuff again. But it really helps us to establish that we're coming in to this community and this is not going to be an eyesore anymore. It also helps us get rid of whatever was happening there. We took over one laundry, and the coin pusher is a big debate. They work in some locations. We find they make us a lot of money, but they cause a lot of problems. So we pull them now. But we had a location that had the quarter to access the bathroom and the coin pusher. And that was where he was making all of his money. And it's like, well, we own a laundromat. We don't own a coin pusher store or a bathroom. So we removed the bathroom access and we took the coin pusher out. And within a week, nobody was hanging out there anymore. Mm. We want to immediately change that feeling that this isn't your coffee break or boys club. This is the neighborhood laundromat that is safe for the mother to come into.
Mm. That's awesome.
Man, you've hit on so much. I hope people are taking notes when they're watching this, because you've hit on so much that when you start with a rundown laundromat and you try to take it to what I call the top of the industry, mm-hmm. both operationally and facilities, which are two different things, by the way, how it can really revolutionize a community. And obviously the profitability just follows with that. I'm curious your thoughts on something, Ross. You talked about during COVID, and I've talked to people all over the country about this, that are operating top of the industry laundromats, facilities and operations. I believe we're currently in the middle of a revolution that 20, 30 years we're going to look back on and realize maybe COVID at least accelerated it, if you will. Do you see that sticking around, or do you think that's a temporary thing from COVID? And what I mean by that is, you talked about people valuing cleanliness and ozone systems or just being attended and modernized facilities and newer equipment versus redoing a bearing job on a 30-year-old Milner or whatever, those types of things. Do you think that's temporary and people just and I know you don't have a crystal ball, but do you think people are going to continue to value that in the future? Because I personally do, but I'm curious your thoughts on that.
No, I 100% think it's sticking around. I mean, you and I know that it was already here before COVID, mm-hmm. because we ran probably price leading laundromats long before COVID, and it didn't scare customers away. We got rid of the customer that was looking for the dollar top loader. I'm not that laundromat. There's another one down the street, and I'm okay with losing those customers, mm-hmm. because so I think what it did is almost prove the point that people are not, price is not the first thing they're looking for. There are a couple of people, I won't say never, never to any statement usually. So you can find me the customer that cares about the price first. That's fine. They're not my customer because they care about price. My customer cares about my attendant that's saying good morning, the having lights on and not having a strip of lights off in the middle of the day because they're saving money. That's the important stuff to what I find to be my average customer. And it's where we've found success. So I can't possibly think that that's going to change all of a sudden. It's only growing. We have a new generation of customers all the time that are now leaving home or whatnot that now need to do laundry when they may not have before. So with bigger, newer machines, with the technology and Apple Pay, now I have a customer base that never existed before because they didn't know what a quarter was, basically. Like, I've got this phone. How do I pay? So we really have expanded our clientele basis from what started out as like, I mean, like our first store when we bought it was 95% Hispanic. We didn't lose that clientele when we reopened as the most expensive laundromat with the newest equipment. We added to that base. Mm-hmm. So I find that to be pretty much true in every neighborhood we go into. It doesn't matter what it starts with. The customers are loyal, and they only become more loyal when they feel appreciated and have a clean and safe place to go.
I think if I could call out one thing and everything you just said in that amazing statement, Ross, it's know your customer. I say all the time in business, you know what? It's your business. It's not mine. You get to choose what your business is. And I'm not here to judge you for that, despite what you may think. It's your business. But we have to know our customer.
And know the customer you want.
Yes, absolutely.
Not just who's coming, but who do you want to come?
Yes. Well, and that's a great point, Carla, because it goes back to the marketing, right? You talked about earlier not knowing how to market. Well, I'm guessing, and I'm putting words in your mouth here, but I'm guessing, you didn't know the technical aspect, but I'm guessing back then you didn't really know who your customer was. I mean, you were so early on and dealing with trauma and fires and stuff. You are probably too focused on who's my customer. How do I market them in a very specific way? In the marketing world, they call it an avatar, which is just a fancy way of a customer. But define your avatar is what any good marketer will tell you. Don't apologize for it and go after them. Give them the value they expect. If they want the cheapest price in town and the only thing they care about is price, then guess what? Your facilities are going to reflect that. If that's the business you want to run, by all means, have at it. But market to those people. Market to that avatar. If you want to be in the middle and be what I call kind of a commodity mindset, it's a nice facility, but it's the no frills, you know, is kind of what a lot of us call it. Then go after that customer. They may care about price a little bit and value a little bit, but they also care about the value that's being exchanged in return. They're kind of middle of the road. And if you're looking for that higher end modernized laundromat that I personally believe is revolutionizing our industry in every community across the country right now, then know that too. Set your prices, market to that avatar, and don't apologize for it. And I mean, you're one fantastic example with your business model and how you've evolved since 17. But the fact of the matter is we all three of us here know people all over the country that are doing this. This isn't unique to Cincinnati. And it's not unique to LA. So just decide what your business model is. And by the way, guys, it's okay for you to pivot away from that too. Ross talked about how at the beginning of his journey, they were kind of at the bottom of the industry by default because that's what they bought. But he did something about it. He went out and said, I want to be a different version of laundromat owner and operator, and I want to build this over time. And that's exactly what me and Carla did too. So going back to what I talked about in the beginning, know what industry you're in, know where you're going, but also just start where you are, guys. Start where you are. You can't change where you are today, but you can change it tomorrow. But it takes hard work. It takes 16-hour workdays. Sometimes it does take maxing out those credit cards. And while we're all a little apprehensive to tell you to go do that, sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes it does. I could tell you, we've done a lot of the same things that you described early on. And it was stressful and scary. Before I let you go today, I have a question for you. When it comes to pickup and delivery, knowing what you know now, you've been doing pickup and delivery for 4 years, you said. And by the way, guys, Ross is going to be on our pickup and delivery panel at the Laundromat Millionaire Conference. And so if you don't get to come this year, find a way to connect with Ross, find a way to reach out to Ross because he has a lot of knowledge. But I'm curious, two things. What would you tell a laundromat owner that's considering starting pickup and delivery? And it doesn't have to be one thing.
It seems like an easy add-on business because you're already in the laundromat business and I can have some employees come in at night and do laundry when nobody else is using the machines. It's great to get the machines turning more. I would say it's a much more time-intensive, capital-intensive business than self-serve. I would consider, I mean, we did end up building a facility and moving it out of our laundromat so it operates independently. One, because we were pissing customers off. We had outgrown that. And two, I employ as many people in my pickup and delivery as we do in our 8 laundromats. It is just its own animal. So don't just think you're going to add it and sit at home and add some more money. It's going to quadruple your time needed is what I say. It can be fantastic, especially once you crack the logistics and processes and procedures. You can get it simpler, but it's not self-serve. And I would also add back on self-serve. I mean, I try to not be the smartest person in the room. I will gladly say that I have surrounded myself and been fortunate early on. And you talk about partnering up with people. I have been very lucky in the people that have been willing to give me time when I was starting and partnered with me over the years. And they're not even necessarily with the same distributors. We have Dexter stores and we have Speed Queen stores. And I can call either of my sales reps. And they were actually at our wedding. I've partnered with really, really good people that, are not afraid to tell me that's stupid. And we can talk back and forth, and that's created a lot of our success is having those partners around to lean on when stuff is going wrong and when stuff is going right.
Wow. Well, I don't think it's any coincidence that that mindset reflects your success. And I'll also point out something else, guys. When you get to a certain level of success in any business or life, a lot of times it's really easy to get what I call fat and happy, right? To get comfortable. I call it comfortable complacency, right? It's easy to do that because you've accomplished something. And let me point something out to you. If someone were going to find themselves in a situation where they would slip into a place of comfortable complacency, it's typically after, let's say, 4 or 5 years of substantial success, which is what Ross has experienced. A lot of adversity, but he's also found a lot of success along that journey. Let me point something out to you. Ross was literally the first person to register for the Laundromat Millionaire Conference. Literally the first ticket within hours. I think it might have even been minutes to register for it. And I don't know that Ross gets a prize for that other than bragging rights. But the fact of the matter is, what I want to point out to the industry is he understands the value of networking. He understands the value of relationships. He just talked about it. It's a big part of what's made him successful. So why would he get to a certain point and then stop? No. He understands the value of those things. He understands the value of mentors, of, he said it, being in a room with people smarter than you, or at least with different opinions than you, and challenging each other and growing. That's what this industry is all about. That's what this revolution that's happening in this industry is all about. And that's what Ross was just pointing out. So I want to call attention to that. All right. The last thing before we go, Ross, and I want to address this regarding pickup and delivery too, if you could. I personally have the opinion, because I have hundreds of conversations all the time with people that have launched pickup and delivery and are failing. Now, different people have different definitions of failing, but what I mean by that is they're not thriving, right? They might be making a little money, but they're not making what they should be making, what you and I know they should be making. They might not be making any money. They might be losing money. And even more catastrophic, a lot of them don't know it. For those people that have launched pickup and delivery, they've been in the game a few years. They haven't cracked that code. They haven't figured out how to scale the business, how to find that level of profitability that we know exists within pickup and delivery. What's a few tidbits, pieces of advice that you could offer for them? Because I know you've kind of grown through that, and maybe I think we're always still growing through that. Do you have any thoughts on that person that's kind of in the middle and they might give up, they might walk away and say, it's not for me, and they might go straight to the moon? They're kind of at this inflection point.
But one of the big errors I made in the beginning was, especially with commercial, it's like, oh, you're going to do daily pickup. So I'll give you a 50 cent discount or whatever. I can get away with giving more of a discount if you're walking it into the laundromat, because now I'm paying the staff that's already there and the washer. I know what that kind of costs me. Now I'm sending a van, a driver, and then it's coming back and being washed in a private facility with injection. And then it's driving back. It's a different cost. So we had to go through really during COVID and readjust our prices to reflect the extra time. And we lost a couple of customers that I had had since the very, very beginning. And that's hard because I can obviously see their total spend, but if I take the total spend and I'm picking up five times a week, then all of a sudden that huge number over 4 years doesn't look so huge. And we just had to really readdress the cost. I mean, we know when somebody does self-serve how much it costs to put it in plastic, and then we provide tote bags and all of that stuff. But when you have to add the gas, the insurance, the car payments, the price can't be 10 cents more. Mm. It has to be substantially more. So we had to, I had an easier time understanding my value proposition with my self-serve and my drop-off fluff and fold. I had to get to that same mindset with my pickup and delivery. And I will add that with the conference, 2021 also brought Russell left his corporate job and is full time in the laundromat industry.
That was an awesome feeling.
Huge milestone for us. And we hired our first operations manager because I'm a little behind on some of the things that we needed. And both Russell and our operations manager are coming to the conference with me. So everybody can finally meet Russell. I know some people don't think I'm even married.
Awesome.
We're very excited. We're very excited.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. All right. So I got to ask you now. So what are, and I know everything's relative with pricing. You're in LA. Some people say that's a depressed market as far as pricing is concerned. What are your prices for drop-off laundry? And if it's different at different stores, just an average. And then what's your price for pickup and delivery? Because I'm curious what that gap is that you were just discussing.
Yeah, so we just increased in December. So we went to $1.95 for our standard 24-hour service in drop-off, walk-in drop-off, and $2.25 for same day. And we just increased our pickup and delivery to $2.29 a pound with a $45 minimum. And that's going, that's around the corner from another increase. We really need to be closer to at least a 240, 250 for pickup and delivery.
When you increase prices on drop-off and pickup and delivery, what's your general assessment overall in your business? Do you usually see business drop off by 50% because you went up 20 cents a pound? I know that's like everybody's like worst fear, right? Is like, what's the worst that could happen? I could lose all my customers, which we know that doesn't happen. What's been your assessment?
So our last increase for self-serve, we pretty much stayed level for the month, which means we lost some customers. Mm-hmm. But if I stayed level and now my machines are getting used less, I've created more space in the laundromat. What always happens is the next month, I see the revenue go up because now the people that were feeling like they were getting a little too crowded, or the customer that complained a little too much, we finally cut them off. And I don't think we're talking huge numbers. But obviously, if I raise my prices a quarter, I should see that much in income go up. So if I stay level, I've lost some customers, or I happen to do a raise at a down month. With drop off, fluff and fold, we just typically see the increase. People are too loyal to us at this point. They know my attendance. They know who's doing their laundry. They're not interested in trying to test out something that's not going to work because most of our customers, to be frank, started somewhere else because we are more expensive. So they tried cheaper and saw what cheaper brought them. So they don't go anywhere really.
Yeah, we have a philosophy with really all of our services, but especially pickup and delivery, because it's kind of the premium service. We have a philosophy where we say, spoil the customers to the point of where going anywhere else or doing laundry themselves is absolutely a horrifying thought. Like they'll just tell me what to pay you. I just don't want to do laundry. And please don't make me go to that guy up the road. Because we both know that there's a lot of people doing pickup and delivery. There's a lot of people running laundromats. and those are not the same thing. Like, they are, a lot of cases, not even your competitor. And I'll just share our pricing here in Cincinnati, guys, as of this episode, which we're in like almost March of 2022 at this point when this is being recorded. And our drop-off laundry prices are $1.80 a pound, soon to go over $2. And our pickup and delivery prices are $2.49, soon to go up to $2.69. So the people saying that you can't charge these prices, I mean, L.A., Cincinnati, not really the same place, not really the same vibe.
A little different.
A little bit different, you know. We're kind of Midwest semi-conservative, and L.A. tends to be like the party town and where all the Hollywood money is and everything. So the fact of the matter is, I'm not saying that you live out in the middle of the country somewhere that you can just charge $50 a pound or something like that, but the message I want to get across to the industry is that I'm not the only one charging these prices, and neither is Ross. Other people are doing it. And by the way, it's part of this revolution. Build it into your business model. Yeah. Running a logistics business is not a cheap business, and you should be rewarded for that, meaning you should have a reasonable profit margin. The last thing I want to point out is something you touched on real quick, Ross, and it was you raise your prices on, I think you said self-serve, and your business kind of stayed the same. He's talking about top-line revenue, guys. He's talking about gross revenue. And when your gross revenue seems the chart is the same, but you've driven away business, that means your utility costs are going down while your revenue stays the same gross, which means what? Your margins, your profitability is better. So even if he stayed at whatever, $5,000 a week for that service, and his expenses for his store for that week went from $3,000 a week down to $2,800 a week, he has a healthier business. His customers have a better experience. So even if his top line revenue didn't go up, his business is healthier. It's more profitable. His customers that stuck around and paid that premium, they're getting a better experience. He talked about his store not being as busy, which means machines aren't as dirty, which means machines don't break down as often. That value prop went up when he raised his prices, even though he drove away customers. So it's really just a matter of looking at it through a different vacuum. Once again, we're not here to tell you what to do or what not to do. We just want to teach people. We just want to share different ideas, different patterns, different trajectories happening across the industry. So listen, Ross, thank you for taking the time to share this with us today. I can't wait to see you. This episode might actually be coming out like as we're arriving in Fort Lauderdale. So if you're watching this in the future, you might have already missed the conference that we were discussing, but we hope to meet you maybe at the Clean Show, Excellence in Laundry, the different events that happen in our industry. This wasn't about promoting our conferences. It was just about promoting the things that Ross was talking about, the knowledge, the mentoring, the experience, those types of things. Listen, Ross, I'm guessing that a lot of people watching this already know how to get a hold of you, but if they don't, how can they get a hold of Ross Dodds? How can they get to know you better?
So they can email me at ross@washclubla.com they can find me on Facebook. I'm on all the forums, but Laundry Owners, I run that one. You can message me on Facebook. We can schedule a time to chat. I'm happy to chat with anybody. If you're in the LA area, I always welcome people into any of my stores. If you want me there, let me know when you're going to be there so I can actually schedule it. But if you just want to come in and look around, I always welcome people into any of my stores. If you say you can't afford the Laundromat Conference ticket or Clean Show ticket, get an American Express and fly for free and stay for free.
There you go.
Tie you all of our capital.
I know. I wanted to delve into that, but we're running out of time. I'm going to have to hit you up at the conference.
All right. 30 seconds. Tell people what you're talking about, Ross, real quick. Tell people what you're talking about, because I think some people will get value out of this.
Yeah. I mean, we're business owners. There's a lot of expenses. So I put everything on credit cards, mostly charge cards, so that I pay it back every month now. But there's a tremendous amount of points with that. So we do all of our traveling, flying, hotels for free because of our business expenses. So if you're going to have to spend it, you might as well get rewarded for it. And it gives me the opportunity to go to conferences like this without really coming out of pocket. It can be a tremendous value.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's your last golden nugget for the day, guys. Reach out to Ross. Man, how generous of him to offer to show you around if you're in the California area, for offering his email address like that. Go to his Facebook group, Laundromat Owners is the name of it. If you haven't joined our group, do that as well. There's value in both. Ours is called Laundromat Millionaire Owners Group. You know, maybe you'll find you like some of them better than others. I find that there's a couple that I've really honed in on, which is primarily mine and Ross's group. And there's a lot of great people in there offering a lot of value. So get in there, help some people if you're able to, answer some questions, and look for ways to grow and build relationships. But anyway, listen, man, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you taking the time to come on here and try to bring value to our audience. Can't wait to see you soon. To the audience at home, Laundromat Millionaire fans, listen, guys, we're going to keep trying to bring value to the industry like this. If you haven't gotten my book, go check it out on my website. If you're not aware, I've got a new laundromat course out. The course is really designed for people that that are new to the industry, just getting in the industry, and it's designed to kind of be sort of a masterclass, if you will, on how to avoid the mistakes, how to get the industry the right way, how to find laundromat financing, creativity, how to build your stores in the right way, how to find a great distributor and get the mentorship and the advice, how to properly network. Carla and I spent a ton of time putting this course together, and if you've been in the industry for 10 years and you know as much as Ross, probably not any reason for you to purchase it, because once again, you're not our avatar. But this is designed for people that are looking at the industry, that are intrigued by the industry, that want to help us elevate our industry. We want to give you every opportunity through that course to get off to the right start. Because if you get off to the wrong start, you're in big trouble. If you get off on the right foot, the sky's the limit for you. And that's usually where we see a lot of accelerated growth. And that's where, by the way, the profitability comes to, which is fun. So anyways, thanks for joining us today, guys. For me, Dave Menz in Cincinnati, Ohio, my beautiful wife, Carla, and my good bud, Ross, out in LA. We'll see y'all next time for another episode of the Laundromat Millionaire Show. Take care, everyone.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.